Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Darren Moser, and I'm joined here, as always, by castaways Philip Gilfus and Daniel Prue. Gentlemen, how are things going in your portion of our temporary bunker here? I mean, we're just going to be here a couple of days, I'm sure.
That's good, because I ate all the rations already, so...
Oh, that's totally fine. Don't even sweat it, Daniel. Yeah, it's okay. Good. We have replicators here.
Yeah, and I'm torn. I've been, watching Voyager and then taking a lot of quizzes to figure out, am I a castaway Ginger or am I more of a castaway Marianne? So, I don't
Philip,
know.
I think you know the answer to that.
Yeah, I think we all know the answer to that.
Well,
you married Ginger, and you know.
It's very kind of you to say.
Well, gentlemen, it's been another week. Any rewatches underway or Trek on the brain? How are you guys celebrating as we are rounding out the end of this 50th anniversary of Star Trek?
Well, I think it's interesting, having been doing my rewatch for years. Well, I mean, rewatch number 857243, of course. But I've left DS9, and so I'm on a Sol Voyager rewatch. So it's sort of interesting just to be in back to one series, because that hasn't happened since I started Next Generation. So it's sort of interesting just to be back in the one series to focus on. And
that's right, because you did Air Order, so you were watching dual series for a while there.
As the Great Bird of the Galaxy meant.
You know, I have meant to do this for a while. I booted up Star Trek Online last night on my Xbox. And didn't.
Which is a new thing now.
Yes, yes. I mean, I have played the game in the past. In fact, I played it quite extensively a few years ago for about a month and got pretty far, if I remember correctly. But this was literally 4 or 5 years ago. So I booted up on my Xbox. I didn't get very far. I created, I think it was a Vulcan, lady science officer. I didn't even get past the tutorial yet. But it's one of those games I'm just going to play a little bit at a time and just, you know, try to have fun with it.
Yeah, I booted it up. It was when I forgot that it's free. I'm like, okay, I guess, I mean, I really want to play this, but don't have a ton of cash right now. It's free. Oh, okay. This is perfect. So I created 3 slots, which I think I went with a Vulcan. So I noticed that the face looked a lot like Elrond, like with the pointed ears and the haircut. So I have Elrond on the USS Rivendell. And then I started a Klingon challenge. It was very interactive. And that was Commander Kavok on the IKS Bij, of course. And then I started the Romulan campaign, which is actually really interesting because, again, it's set very far in the future. So Romulus has been destroyed and they're like
spoilers,
refugees. So I'm really excited to kind of play these along as it goes.
And this is one of the things I think we need to remember because, you know, there are a lot of JJ haters out there and whatever. I mean, maybe it's not your thing or whatever. But he's left his mark on both the Prime Universe and his own universe, because wherever you go, something significant has happened. I mean, there is no Romulus. If Discovery was set, or maybe a future series will be set in the future, past the 24th century, it's going to have we're going to deal a lot with this, because this is a pretty serious thing.
Yeah, you're either going to have no Romulus or no Vulcan, yep, depending on what side of the timeline you fall on. Yep. It's been a lot of fun. It's still a good year for Trek. And, you know, there's a little bit of a delay for Discovery, but eventually we'll get to that. But, you know, we'll cross that 2 bridge when we get there. Well, today on City Alpha 3, we are going to be discussing universal episodes in the Star Trek franchise. You know, these are episodes that, or not even episodes, just tropes. And I mean, tropes kind of sometimes seems like a harsh word, but we're not going to shy away from it. But basically, these are things that always keep coming up. You know, the holodeck. You know, I mean, we all say, like, hey, let's go on the holodeck. Do we really want to? Because the holodeck always is malfunctioning. I mean, it almost seems not worth it at the time. But, you know, throughout science fiction television, you know, there are these universal themes. You know, you have, you know, Inside the Mind episodes like DS9 Extreme Measures. You have the Groundhog's Day episodes like TNG Cause and Effects, Trial of the Main Character, TOS Court Martial, and so on. But, you know, Star Trek in its own has its own types of flavor, its own episode type. So I wanted to make a list show. I know of these types of episodes.
That's right. All 700 whatever XX episodes.
Well, first off, who doesn't love a good broken holodeck episode? And actually, this lets us talk about the often forgotten, rarely watched, slightly communicated, the animated series. And there was a episode with a broken holodeck. I think it was called The Practical Joker. And the computer was just going a little crazy. And I think it put a kick me sign on the back of Kirk. And I just really wanted to be able to include this series. But the first one that came to mind wasn't TAS. It was Elementary Dear Data in TNG, where, come on, Geordi, says the wrong words, and now we have a killer machine on our hands.
And I don't want to go down a wormhole.
Is it stable or not, Philip?
Is it a micro wormhole? Because we got time for a micro wormhole.
But like, with TAS and the Practical Joker, they did have this holodeck version on the Enterprise, but, like, is that just an example of the TS being ignored by the live verse? You know, it's not like, hey, we already had this.
You mean like how they were saying that the holodecks were new on Next Gen? They didn't necessarily say they were new, but they did say that they were very advanced, or maybe something that would only be like on a starbase or something, that level of complexity, which, again, after we get some binars, they start making things a little more advanced and take all the safeties off, apparently.
I don't think we want to get into the canonicity of the animated series. I know of at least one person who would be probably very upset by the discussion. No, you know, plus I can't say anything about it because I still have yet to watch it, which I will. Don't worry. It's one of my goals. It's interesting that this is the one, like, because you were just mentioning it, this is the one, because I've seen the image on the internet before, where he's got, it's not a kick me. It doesn't say Kirk is a jerk or something like that.
Oh, that's right. The alliteration. Kirk is a jerk. How could I forget? Kirk is a jerk.
Notes for those listening, that's not actually alliteration.
Episode title.
I would definitely cosplay as that. I don't know if anybody has yet or not, but that's pretty funny.
There you go. Oh, now you come up with a cosplay. I don't think Philip was meaning that the TAS wasn't canon, but more the writers definitely chose to ignore it and tell their own stories.
I think that's always that sort of how, I mean, because I enjoy TAS, but like it's the writers in and of themselves. Like, how do you reconcile it to its own universe?
But moving on from TAS, we have TNG, something we know a little bit about. Elementary Dear Data, you got Moriarty, you're stuck inside, you got the big goodbye with Gloria. The wonderful Whoopi Goldberg. Bring back Whoopi. Bring back Guinan. Hashtag. I forget what causes the issue, actually, in that episode. But there is an issue because they can't get out. And the historical documents keeper has been shot. It's very bad.
If only there was some sort of a medical professional with them. Maybe to alleviate the stressfulness of that situation. But, you know.
I mean, as long as Guinan's lived, she hasn't picked up a field medic course at all during this time.
Well, see, I think the interesting thing about with TNG, again, you have to, I guess, somewhat ignore TAS. You know, TNG sort of introduces the holodeck, not to just viewers, but theoretically to the universe, to Starfleet, like that. And so for me, when things go wrong in TNG, I'm a little more forgiving because it's, you know, it's version.
Look, you guys signed the waiver before you got on this deck. You knew what you were getting
into.
Like,
the holodeck, you have to wait for it to upgrade every 6 months when you're resetting it, and it's just kind of jerky, and there's new features, and you're waiting for the new Holodeck 2 to be released, and then you have the competitor
So does that mean they come down and he turns it on and he's like, great, you really want to enjoy this, you know, seaside Caribbean beach, but hey, we got a patch from Starfleet today, so you're going to have to wait about 3 hours for us to install that before you can come in. You just wanted to enjoy some time and eat some, you know, holographic fruit. That's all you want.
Then you have the rival iSuite, and, you know, then it's which one's going to be, you know.
Well, the iSuite, no matter what anyone else says, they invented the antechamber room. I mean, people say that's been around forever, but I'm pretty sure the iSuite invented that.
The holodeck 2.0 is the lightest, thinnest holodeck we've ever made. Yeah,
no. Using a fraction of power that previous holodecks, this one actually runs on a completely different power source that can't power anything else on the entire ship.
That's true, because you had to plug the holodeck into the charger, but the holo suite ran on its own power source, which you, especially in the Intrepid models.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, not to date the show, but, you know. Apple getting rid of the headphone jack. That's what they did. They got rid of the holodeck jack. And
well, you know, it's, some people wanted to talk about holosuites versus holodecks, but, you know, it really doesn't matter. But so you have a lot in TNG. I mean, obviously, many of the episodes are in TNG, but there I did find one in DS9. Again, broken holodecks being in Bada Bing, Bada Bang. It's technically, I would call it a glitch. This is where the program, I guess it's so advanced and so well written, I guess, that the gangsters are attacking it. It's attacking itself. It's self-consuming.
I'm trying to remember the term they use, like Jack in the Box. Like it's like a program that's meant to have a surprise in it.
Oh, that's right. Like if it's been running so long and nothing's happened, that something, yeah, I think it was like Jack in the Box that, and it shakes things up, and so the gangsters were gonna kick out Vic Fun. I don't know. It was kind of a little bit strong arm of a plot, but still fun.
Hey guys, everyone here seen Ocean's 11? Yeah. You want to do an episode on Ocean's 11? Yeah. Okay.
Well, no, but okay, we will. I mean, Sisko gets to make it rain, so that's a cool shot.
Yeah, this episode is a lot of fun. I really like it, but you're also missing another even more fun episode from Deep Space Nine that is kind of, I mean, by your phrasing, it's not a broken holodeck episode, but it is a malfunctioning holodeck experience episode, and that's Armand Bashir. Basically, you know, we just get, just like this is, as Philip said, an Ocean's 11 almost exact remake. I mean, that is such an homage to the classic James Bond adventures, and it's so much fun. I love that episode. It's great.
No, that is a really, really fun one. I've been, you know, listening to some podcasts talk about James Bond franchise with such great love. And yeah, it's just got that classic 60s feel. And again, it, you know, we're not going to get into discussion about why safeties shouldn't even be a thing that can be turned off. Because really, when has that ever benefited the situation?
First contact.
Okay, one time when it benefited, but otherwise, just not even worth it. Okay, but thank you. Yeah, no, I was hard-pressed to come up with not just peppering my list with all TNG references, so I'm glad you helped me find another DS9 one. So Voyager, I found two. You have The Killing Game, which is one of the ones with the Hirogen, and I that's on the edge of the term broken in the fact that, you know, their minds have been kind of controlled, but still the fact that they can't escape the holodeck and they have to play, you know, along with it. So that's not within its normal operating parameters, I'm going to say, but still a really fun episode. And you get to see all our characters, you know, in 1940s, which is kind of cool.
I mean, really, you know, we're talking about all these, but the holodeck as a conceit, as a concept, and all of these episodes are basically just excuses to get our characters in situations that normally would be impossible. Like in the original series, if it was made in the TNG era.
So TNG.
Yeah, if it was.
That's basically the.
Right. what is that one? I'm terrible with episode titles. The Chicago.
That's okay. Just describe it.
The Chicago.
We will help you.
The gangster.
Oh,
piece of the action.
Piece of the action. A piece of the action. Like if that was made during TNG or later,
it wouldn't be a planet. It would be the holodeck.
It would be a holodeck episode. But in TOS,
every planet in TOS was a holodeck.
Well,
oh, that's true.
Yeah, really. Actually, that's
no.
True.
But there was
the Greek planet, the yep. Roman planet, the yep. Nazi planet. They had a Nazi planet.
Well, but you're making me think of it wasn't Rise Up, but it was the Shoreleaf planet was kind of like a holodeck. It had a master computer that controlled the artificial illusions,
mm-hmm. and it went crazy in the animated series.
It always went crazy. I don't think it ever fully worked.
Thing is just, I mean, it's just, you know, you're dealing with science fiction, so it's easier, I think, to bring these kinds of ideas in. And then once they came up with this idea of the holodeck, they just cemented around that. And they're like, no, yeah, sure, let's do an Ocean's 11 ripoff. Let's do a James Bond ripoff. You know, let's do
homage, Daniel. Yeah, homage.
No, but I mean, don't get me wrong. I would say it works probably about half the time. So we get a lot of good episodes out of it. I mean, a lot of, you know, maybe not so great episodes, but I would say it's probably worth it.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's like, it's both good and bad. With the holodeck, it's like, let's get them out of being Star Trek. You know, like, but it's like that, right. Even though that's what we like, you're like, let's not have them be in a starship or exploring space or, you know, let's just do something crazy, which is fine every now and then. So I think it's when you do it too much and you get the reputation.
Well, the last one on my list is Bride of Chaotica, where, again, it's the edge of the term broken, but the fact that they have to play it out because the photonic aliens from the eighth dimension, you know, is the only way. It's the only way, guys. I'm sorry. You're going to have to don black and white clothing and act this out. And, I mean, we love Captain Proton. I mean, we've talked about him a ton, and it's just, it's so fun to delve into this fantasy world. I mean, besides the Voyager episodes where they are hunting the Maquis, you're right. They don't really Starfleet inside of the holodeck. That's not what it's for.
We like that there's a sign, no Starfleeting in the holodeck.
Well, that's a given.
Take off your uniform before you come in the door.
Well, I was going to say leave your badge at the door, but I guess if you want to go full uniform.
Hey, they've all got those blue skivvies from Enterprise, right? That regulation hasn't changed in 100, 200, 300 years or whatever.
Oh, you're saying blue underwear is the universal factor of all of Star Trek?
It is. We just never see it on the rest of Star Trek. Are you saying
that all crew members are science underneath?
That's right. That's
science right. Underneath and command in the sheets.
I would say, though, I really do.
Good try, Philip. Good try.
I would say that I hope that they didn't have to wear that under the monster maroons, because those are probably already way too hot. I can't even imagine.
And then you add the away team jacket that looked with the giant pockets, and it just, that thing looked like it weighed 10 pounds.
Thank you.
Okay, well, moving on from broken holodecks, it seemed very often, it's the size of a large building, but the computer core, it's really complex, and as we know nowadays with Siri and Echo and all this stuff, verbal interfaces are pretty complex. But the computer often wants to take over, and it just wants to do its own thing. So we start off with the ultimate computer, where the M5 chip it runs twice as fast as the M4 chip. It basically causes the death of like what, two or three starships. It needs a recall, to say the least. But that is one of the first few times we have a computer trying to take over the ship or take over something.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that when they were trying out that in the ultimate computer, they brought in these different experts. That's Jurassic Park.
Well, I mean, when you say experts, I mean, I don't really feel the experts in Jurassic Park would have done anything different, but.
Well, always, I mean, it's interesting, and it's cliche, though that's what this whole episode's about, of where when you have people on Star Trek, and it's an ultimate computer, but it's an Enterprise with the, I'm forgetting names, I apologize, but the transporter guy, but people who are very enthusiastic about technology, they kind of always come across as a very over-the-board personality of like, computers are the only way to save the world, mankind are terrible, you know, and so it's always like, well, okay, a little much here, I think.
They're actually doing pretty good by now, like, it's actually not that bad.
People who always are, defending the computer always come out with these very extreme personalities, but it's the universal theme about technology, where it's going, where it's taking us, where we are. So
exactly, yeah. Well, and then I also put in the Changeling, which that's the one with Nomad, which is a computer, which does try to take over the Enterprise. So I always wondered what the original Nomad would look like before it was merged with the alien probe.
But and without the visible strings? Like, was that what the aliens added?
Look, that is a feature.
Not a bug.
It is. It gets really good reception. Just don't hold it the wrong way.
So would we count, then, the motion picture as part of that category?
The computer going wrong?
Well, I was thinking this is more computer taking over.
Okay.
And it doesn't... I mean, it does kind of hold them hostage, literally, like envelops them.
And it holds,
I don't know, I guess what do you say about Aaliyah? It kills her, I guess, and then creates a copy.
Well, yeah, I guess she does die, but yeah, no, that's true.
No, Darren, we witnessed a birth.
Yeah, sure.
And technically, Darren, she's listed as missing.
Yeah, you just want to like cut down on your paperwork, Kirk. That's total BS right there.
Wait, is this going to be like the things of like Kirk's delusions of like, you know, when there's two people dead from your mission, Admiral Kirk, and he's like, no, they're missing. That's how
and one was the captain you just came in and replaced. The biggest set of air quotes right there.
I'm just, you know, guesting as commander of the Enterprise until then.
So in TNG, I would say the game is also kind of like the computer taking over. It's in a very biological way where it's a computer device reprogramming into submission the populace. It's not so much locking them out, but I think you could count that as...
Nope, you're wrong, Darren.
Oh, gosh, why am I wrong?
Well, you know, as I said, it's a good analogy for how technology can take us over. Wait, what would be an analogy for the game?
Okay, Pokemon Go, I mean,
stop.
The game.
Stop. All right, you know what? There's no better place for me to rant about this than, like, look, it's cute, right? On the surface, this is a cute little analogy. Oh, look, people are looking at their phones and not looking where they're going. They're falling into manholes and all of this. It's funny. You know, Pokemon Go is nothing like the game for so many reasons because...
Okay, Farmville then.
Sure, you could say Farmville. That's fine. I was going to argue your point about this being a takeover because the computer itself isn't doing anything. It is literally just the game. It's that lady, and I can't remember her name or her
it's
species.
Just mindless entertainment, Darren. It gets them outside, okay? And wait, what are we talking about?
Outside where? They're
everywhere.
On the ship the whole time.
Oh, no, he's talking about Pokemon Go.
No, you see them playing it in the turbo lift. You know, they're not just in their quarters playing it, you know.
No, they were.
Is the Battle Bridge a gym? Because the Battle Bridge's got to be a gym.
Oh, man. Yep. Oh, actually, I really now want to actually build a map of the Enterprise and pick out what's going to be a gym, what's going to be a Pokestop, where all the... Oh, my God. This is amazing.
Now, and the hardest to reach gym has to be that, like, plasma vent station in the warp nacelle.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But someone walked off the catwalk and fell into the exhaust. So
that's what happened.
That's what happened.
This is the dangers. Now when you start the game, there's actually a little like icon of like the plasma vent with a no through it, and
that's where Mewtwo is. And that guy
was
just going.
You say the parallels aren't there, Daniel, but we just found like another shirt we could make.
Anyways,
okay, well.
The point was, the computer wasn't doing anything wrong itself. It was being used by that lady who was trying to take over.
But I mean the alien computer or whatever programmed the game. Like, I'm not necessarily saying the Enterprise computer. I'm just saying a computer takes over.
The computer itself isn't smart enough to try to... It's not the computer that's trying to take over the Enterprise. It's that lady that's trying to use the game to take over the Enterprise.
That's true. It's the method, but it's not necessarily self-taking
over. Right. It's not like... Like you mentioned, the ultimate computer, where that computer itself is taking over everything. The game isn't taking over anything. It's just incapacitating the people so that the lady can take over the Enterprise.
That's true.
Again, I don't remember her character's name. But
now, in Elementary Dear Data, again, that's, you know, self-aware Moriarty is definitely... I mean, he pulls that lever and everything shakes. So that's total takeover right there. And, you know, creating the ship within a ship... In a bottle, as it were.
You've never done a ship in a bottle, Darren?
No, I've totally done ships in a bottle. I 3D print them all at once, and then it's already done.
Hey, that's cheating. That doesn't
count. Hey, no, it's a new method. But I also thought of, and I think I will fight you if you disagree on this one, Brothers, which I'm pretty sure that's the one where Data locks out the ship, right, and goes back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's totally the computer taking over. I mean, Data totally takes over that like a boss.
Data is not a computer.
I will fight you on this, Daniel.
Did you not watch the trial?
No.
There he sits.
You can be a new form of life and a computer at the same time, Philip. Those two things are not mutually exclusive.
I mean, just because you don't have Wi-Fi or Pokestops doesn't mean you can't be classified like a computer.
Oh, man, Data could be like a mobile Pokestop.
So then what are the binars?
They're obviously ones and zeros. Did you not watch Reboot? I mean, it explains it pretty well what the binars are.
Binars are cyborgs, so they aren't computers. They're
apologetic, meek, timid cyborgs.
They're people dependent on computers, not computers themselves. That's what I would argue.
And then the last one I could think of was emergence, which is where that the computer is infected by whatever that cloud or whatever it passed through, but then it creates a life form. But it does take control of where the ship goes and what it's doing and how it's, you know, as we're heading to New Order Form City.
Yeah, that is probably the clearest example, I would argue.
I mean, computers taking over starships are one thing, but when you had a space station, it's even worse. And one of my favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine is Civil Defense, which is the one with the little replicator that spits out the phaser bomb, phaser, like, little battery. And I love this one because you get the awesome, you know, computer squawking at him. You get pre-programmed Dukat with this, mm-hmm. which is really funny because you obviously know it's pre-programmed because he's not even there and it's nothing like that. But did you like Civil Defense, Daniel? Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that episode. That episode's wonderful. It's so much fun. Like you said, with the Dukat stuff. And then Garrett gets up there and that is a wonderful episode of Deep Space Nine. And it is probably the prime example of what we're talking about here, where it's probably the best example that of like the technology itself turning in on you and how do you get out of that kind of a thing.
Well, I do. I mean, I enjoy when you can't accuse Deep Space Nine ever talking about the occupation, but I mean, of the Deep Space Nine of like Tarak Nor, of that it is an... We forget it is an ore processing plant. Yeah. Like,
it's enemy territory.
Like, it's not just this random star base in front of a wormhole, because it was never meant to be any of those things. It's a ore processing plant orbiting a planet. And so it's,
with a mall.
Yeah.
Because that's totally applicable to the processing of ore.
Well, to be fair, they show the promenade before it was Deep Space Nine, and it was definitely not a mall.
It was like the old mall.
That is true.
It's more like the old mall.
It's the strip mall before the new developer comes in. We're going to clean up this town. But yeah, no, Civil Defense is great. And actually, every time I see Garrick, because he only has the level to like only go through the force fields, but he can't really do anything else, totally reminds me of Star Trek, the interactive VCR board game, A Klingon Challenge, where you have to upgrade your access level with the little tricorders, and he's only got like level 2, and he can just go through force fields. Like, he can't get caught in a stasis field.
Garrick, I have placed you in a stasis field. Oh, Civil Defense would have been even better if not Gowron was the one behind it.
Oh my gosh.
That would have been awesome.
I didn't think we could make it a better episode, but I think we just did.
Well, I do enjoy that you have, and I can't remember the episode, sorry, Deep Space Niners, but like you'll have times where, like, I mean, in Civil Defense, but other times where like the Starfleet computer and the Cardassian computer are like battling against themselves sometimes. Yeah.
No, that does happen. Yeah, and Miles is always stuck in the middle, and then he usually gets burned or plasma scored or something bad happens to him. Well, the last one I could think of was in Voyager, Renaissance Man, which I think is a season 6 or 7. It's fairly along there, but this is the one where the Doctor and Janeway were off on a mission and she gets kidnapped and he has to impersonate many people from the crew. So yes, it's not the Voyager computer, but it is the Doctor, a portion of that computer, who basically is taking over and ejects the warp core and steals it.
Once again, Darren's making sentient life beings into nothing but computers. Darren, that's sentientness.
Gosh. Look, okay, I haven't read Photons Be Free yet, okay? It's on my pad. I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but maybe I'll change my mind after reading of the plight of the EMH. I mean, gosh, it can't be that bad. Well, moving on to our third. See, like I said, I could fit it into a well-formatted list. Powering down. There are times when the Starship, it's got to power down. It's either a forced power down, or they got to run on really minimum power, turn off all the lights, the budget's gone. We really got to keep things really minimum. So I couldn't think of as many instances for this. Do we want to count Genesis in season 7 of TNG? I mean, they're not really powering it down, but like it's on minimum power. Everything's really dark. So,
you know, it's not the first example I would have thought of. I actually would have brought up Starship Mine before.
Oh, yeah. Genesis. There you go.
Because that is a time where they specifically are shutting everything off and you know, turning off the lights on your way out before you get your saddle kind of thing.
Well, I mean, any good writer has his saddle.
His own saddle, of course. I mean, come on.
But no, that's very true. Although the lighting is pretty on throughout the ship, if you think about it. It's not very dark.
I think the corridors are, if I remember correctly, and it's been a little while since I've seen the episode, I think the corridors are actually pretty standardly lit. But like when he's in sick bay and he's on 10 forward and stuff, it is definitely much dimmer than it usually is.
Yeah, no, it is darker. It's just not like when Voyager goes dark, it's like they're lit by hand beacons and nothing else. Like it's really dark.
I would also parts before they start orbiting a star, I would say Generations, much darker than the rest of the series, you know.
True, but that's not because it was powered down.
No, of course not. But it just looks just because, so much different.
I mean, the HMS cinematographer had docked with them and they got, you know, a new upgrade. But but yeah, no, that Starship Mine definitely is an instance of things being powered down, things being darker.
There was the one scene as well, The Last Outpost, where everything was getting shut down, and like they had to put all like the blankets and stuff on, and Wesley was going to die like a man, all that stuff. But there was only like a scene or two where they were all huddled in 10. It wasn't 10 forward yet, but they were all huddled somewhere.
in random set.
Yeah.
Print. Well, I had to stretch it a little bit for this one, but I would count Empok Nor as a power down because, I mean, now you might not recognize it. It's turned by about,
right,
I don't know, maybe 40 something degrees. That's Empok Nor. I mean,
not to be confused.
Now, if you approach it from a different, you know, totally different than Tarak Nor. But yeah, so, but Empok Nor, I mean, that's super dark and totally tilted. I don't know how they didn't like slide off the side.
But we just mentioned it, and I guess this really is not the same, Darren, but I always think of, because you're talking about literally darker, what we just mentioned with Odo's...
Well, I don't mean literally darker, I mean powered down.
Right. So you don't have all access to everything. You have to actually go up the Jeffrey's tubes, and mm-hmm. I don't know what Cardassian Jeffrey tubes are called, so...
I think that's what it is, Cardassian Jeffreys. That's right. Not speciesist at all.
Right. It's like Belgian waffles.
Exactly, yeah.
Canadian bacon.
Yep.
Right.
Oh, by the way, I was talking to a Canadian the other day. They don't call it Canadian bacon. I don't remember what he said they called it, but it's not called Canadian
bacon. Bacon?
Daniel, they have names.
Well, yes, but you wouldn't know that. Anyways, Empek Nor is a great example. An interesting episode, but I mean... It's kind of like if we went on board the Yamato in TNG and everything was darker. So it's a little bit different because it's not actually, but I guess it doesn't matter. You're just saying powered down episodes. So yeah, that's a perfect application.
Now, I'm trying to remember in the episode where Vosh brings that crystal and it's feeding gravitons to destroy.
Daniel, do you know the name of that episode?
You're funny. It's the Q episode from Deep Space Nine. I think it's Q Punch.
It's
or something like that.
Keyless. Handlebar mustache.
Keyless.
There's a Deep Space Nine episode where they're on the Defiant, and they're trying to find the changeling. They know there's a changeling on board.
Oh,
And it's
yes.
Disabled a bunch of systems, and I can't remember the name. Really, I can't remember this episode. But that one is a lot of dark corridors and stuff like that. That one was pretty good, too.
And obviously, Voyager, we have Night, where they're in the void and everything's super dark and the aliens tap the power because they don't want it to Voyager to have its nightlight on. So that's the cool shot where you see all the decks go off one by one. And then the final shot is the main deflector dish, like clicking out, and it gets really pretty, pretty dark.
Is that the one where they haven't seen stars in like months and months?
Yeah, for a while, and Neelix's getting super claustrophobic, and he wants to make some curtains, and it's as one does. But he, Yeah, it's really, it's not the one where they're all in stasis and Seven of Nine is the lone
But that's actually a good example as well of that. Yeah.
But I don't think they had to power down. I think they were just
on low power, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and they just couldn't, their psyche or their brain chemistry couldn't survive the void or the space. That happens a lot too. I mean, it's just space is dangerous. Now, what was your dark episode or power down episode from Voyager that you thought of, Philip?
So basically, Janeway fights the viruses.
Oh, Macrocosm.
Oh, Macrocosm.
Yeah, I pulled that. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. That's because, I mean, that reminds me a lot of sort of the beginning of Genesis in TNG. Sort of you just have two characters coming back to the ship, and it's just like, you have to do the requisite tilted at an angle, so you know it's powered
down. Something's
down.
Totally wrong. They're not on the galactic plane.
But I think the interesting thing about the powered down ones, I mean, this isn't an original thought, but you sort of make the familiar scary. So it's like we know, like if you make the Enterprise D or Voyager or even DS9 or whatever, it's brightly colored. But if you just darken it, suddenly it's a whole new world.
Well, it's not a power down, but the lighting change in yesterday's Enterprise completely makes the ship look different.
Well, I was thinking even Balance of Terror in TOS, when they're doing sort of silent running, they have to power down everything.
Well, in Enterprise, the only one I could think of was the catwalk, where they have to shelter themselves inside the warp nacelles. Sounds like a great idea! but everything else is powered down as they're coasting through the storm.
Well, the one I was thinking of for Enterprise was Amara Darkly, which is actually, it's on the Defiant, which is totally a different ship. But when they're fighting the Gorn, because that's flickering lights off, because they're trying to steal, or the aliens, or the non-Terrans, are trying to take the power out of the Defiant, with Phlox or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. No, that was such a good episode.
Even though it's like a 5-minute, 10-minute scene, even the broken bow in Enterprise, when you have this Suluban turning off the power in the ship, and you have sort of the creepy Suluban on the ceiling in the sick bay, and then zhong, with the Klingon.
Gotta watch out for that jump scare.
Right.
Ah!
That's what I wanted to just discuss. What are these types of episodes that the writers just are like, hey, let's polish that off again. We could totally use that concept again. And blow some space dust off it and totally use it. So, but I honestly don't think we're going to get a lot of that in Star Trek Discovery. I think it's going to be its own, some of these are, they're not filler episodes per se, but they're just so different that it's not part of the main kind of flow of the story.
Hang on. Let me ask you this. Do you want to see a holodeck episode in Discovery?
Fan canon brain hurting.
Okay, maybe not a holodeck episode, because it obviously could not have happened at that
point. Are there pebbles involved?
Yes, do you want to do something like... what I'm saying is...
The rec room is powered down. I can't play my chess anymore.
It's so, not specifically the holodeck, but these kinds of episodes are such a part of Star Trek. I do want them to do new things. I really do. I want them to go out and do things that have never been thought of before and all this stuff. I would love to see a new take on something like a holodeck episode. And so if, and we only have 13 or 12 or whatever it is, if they take half of one, it doesn't have to be the whole episode, right? They're not beholden to this kind of thing. If they just take a tiny plot line and have some new take on it, I would love that, because I would love to see it again, because it is part of Trek. But I would also love to see something fresh with it. And then, it's a balancing act, right? You have to you have to feature things that have been in it before, as well as charting new grounds. And so I'm singling out holodeck episodes only because it's the easy target, but I would love to see these cliche episodes again. Some of them, as long as they're done well.
And I'd love for them to have, this very alien complex being, or as Darren would call them, a computer, that would, feature.
There it sits. Well, it'd be really funny if they spent most of the episode in an alien holodeck, and you're waiting for it to break and to go wrong, and it just, nothing happens. It just works completely as it should.
Now, Brian Fuller has said robots, that there will be robots. So I'm just throwing that out there, or mobile computers,
Brian
Darren.
Fuller says a lot of
mobile
things, but...
computers. Wait, they're going to have cell phones? Like, I don't understand.
With Wi-Fi.
They're smart robots.
Exactly. Exactly. But who knows what the future will bring. Now, from times when we've discussed the holodeck in the past, and even role-played being stuck in the holodeck, Borg incursion simulation, not going to be on my list. Just going to put that right out there. But... from what do you guys think from just series and holographic programs we know, which one would you want to be stuck in if it starts to malfunction? Maybe not deadly, maybe just the door is shut. You can decide how bad it is, but do you want to be on the beach with a guy playing a fiddle, or do you want to be, you know, in Barclay's Musketeer?
I'm trying to think, like, I'm going through all the Voyager ones in my head, and to me they'd be kind of largely boring to be stuck. I mean, they'd be fine. Like, you're stuck in, you know, Baywatch holodeck. I mean, that's fine. You're not going to be... It's relaxing to be stuck in that one. But, I mean, like, it wouldn't be, like, fun necessarily. Though, I don't know, I feel like there's always a bunch of stuff offset. You just see, like... The deck party part, but, like, there's, like, this huge surfing going on, there's this ocean, there's, like, wind just... Turn the camera that way, but
well, that's where the wall is. Unfortunately, you can't get over there. Yeah. You try to walk over there and you hit the wall, and unfortunately, that's not.
Oh,
part of the
man,
program.
How frustrating would the holodeck be if it had invisible? I mean, I guess it wouldn't even be an invisible wall like video games, but it actually had just real walls like that were just real, and like you were like, oh, I'm gonna go into the water now that I'm on the beach, and you just like literally run into a wall.
It's like a video game. You're walking and your feet are moving, yeah. But you're not progressing forward at all.
No, this is like a really cool part
air.
To go into. Oh, it's just a background feature.
So then you just like you try to jump through it, but it never works.
And then it pops up and says you must download the DLC to access the area.
Like,
I'm just saying, that model's not going away by the 24th century. I'm not seeing it happening.
You don't understand the economics of the 24th century. Right here.
That ice.
Gotta have scarcity some way.
Oh,
somebody's got to. Yeah, somebody's got to benefit, I guess. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I'll, just for to have an answer, not Dixon Hill. You know what I'm gonna say? Sherlock Holmes. A Sherlock Holmes mystery. Because if you're stuck in there, you got to solve it.
There you go. And I honestly feel the computer could be smart enough to like mix and match components, not in a create a Moriarty supervillain kind of way, but just in a fun way to make an original story or kind of more of a choose your own adventure type.
No, we know that the computer's capable of that because other than the bit at the end when Geordi says that can defeat Data, the computer did create an entirely new Sherlock Holmes story. So yeah, it's totally capable of that kind of stuff. Absolutely.
And I think I see Daniel in Armand Bashir.
Oh man,
Armand Daniel.
That would be really high on my list. I would absolutely love that.
No, obviously it's got to be the holographic movie theater where you put on the holographic 2D images.
it's not even like holographic. It's literally the 3D glasses.
Yeah, it's like this this idea of watching movies. I don't know if you've seen this, but like the VR technology is getting big now, and like you can watch VR. You know, you can watch movies while you put your VR headset on, and the movie can be literally as big as you want. But it's like, I'll just watch a movie. What's the point of putting the headset on and pretending I'm somewhere
else?
You can
never turn away from the screen. It's always right there.
So, you know, I would not want to. But yeah, I would actually probably pick the Armand Bashir world. That would be pretty awesome.
I would honestly go with the World War II drama, not with like all the death and like brain reprogramming that we get in Voyager, but it'd actually be kind of interesting to like learn that part of history.
What part
but
would
also,
you play? Would you be... I mean, Nazi, of course, first choice, I think. I mean, for you.
Why would you think I'm the Nazi?
Second
That's
place.
Terrible.
Second place would be, French, underground revolutionary. Third place would be U.S. Army, save the day. Though
no,
I was
Darren,
told,
Darren would be the singer on top of the piano, I think, is what he
though,
would
though,
dressed
though
all
I was
in
told
white.
Other countries also engaged in World War II besides Germany and America, but I'm not 100% sure.
No. You must be mistaken.
The historical documents are really kind of vague about that.
No.
So are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, or collectibles? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. And every month, there's Loot Crate Wear, our monthly wearable and accessory subscription to fill your closet with cult classics and your favorite franchise. And if you want to get fancy, there's also the bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Now, ready your wands, pre-measure your potions, and get ready for November's enchanting theme, Magical. They have powerful ancient spells delivered to you with this 100% exclusive crate featuring bewitching items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Big Trouble in Little China. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's Loot Crate. And when that cutoff happens, it's all over. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter code nerdparty to save on any new subscription today. Now, if you want to continue the discussion, you can follow Join Nerd Party on Twitter or facebook.com/thenerdparty to talk about your, what was the word again, Philip?
Reoccurring motifs.
Your reoccurring motifs. But if you wanted to talk to us directly, Daniel, where would people find you if they wanted to talk about their reoccurring motifs in Star Trek?
Well, if they want, they could find me on Twitter at @oneupdan. That's the number one, not the word, where my reoccurring motifs are usually about Pokemon or some other games or something.
And Philip, besides politics, what reoccurring motifs would you speak about online?
That's pretty much it. I guess maybe some occasional Powerpuff Girls, some good 90s television and or cartoons is always my reoccurring motif.
Well, with that reoccurring motif, Philip, where would they talk to you, though?
At NC Public Servant, and all the 90s references and comments will be welcome.
Only the 90s references. That's the only decade.
Only one that matters.
And if someone wanted to talk to me about my reoccurring motifs of science fiction in general, they can find me at Dr. Sci-Fi on Twitter, as well as drsci-fi.com as I journey throughout Southern California, occupying the planet for the Galactic Empire. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
And I'm Daniel Prue. Stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.
Day 5. Resources dwindling.